This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Melissa Block. Today, the Supreme Court issued a stinging rebuke to the Bush administration. It ruled that detainees at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, have the right to challenge their detentions in U.S. courts. It's the third time the court has rejected the president's attempt to limit judicial oversight of the detentions, but it didn't stop there. For the first time, the court said squarely that neither the president nor Congress can strip detainees of their constitutional right of habeas corpus. NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
In 2006, after the Bush administration lost two Guantanamo cases in the Supreme Court, the president, on the eve of the election, turned to Congress for authorizing legislation. And the lawmakers basically ratified the administration's procedures for determining which detainees are too dangerous to be released. Today, the court, by a 5-4 vote, invalidated that effort, declaring it unconstitutional. Writing for the court majority, Justice Anthony Kennedy noted that the Constitution does not allow for the suspension of the writ of habeas corpus except in times of invasion or rebellion, and even then there must be an adequate substitute. The law adopted in 2006, he said, is not such a substitute. He rejected the claim that Guantanamo is foreign soil, noting that the U.S. has maintained total control over it for over 100 years. We cannot allow the nation's constitutional charter to be contracted away like this, he said. The system set up for screening Guantanamo detainees, he said, is fraught with risk of error. The prisoner has no lawyer, no chance to see or rebut evidence against him, and may not even know what the critical allegations against him are. Given that the consequence of making a mistake may mean that a detainee is imprisoned for a generation or more, said the court, the risk of error is too great to ignore. Therefore, any substitute for the constitutionally guaranteed writ of habeas corpus must give the detainee the opportunity to correct errors, present exculpatory evidence, and must present an independent judge with the opportunity to assess the sufficiency of the evidence. Instead, the Military Commissions Act gives review to a single court that's instructed to give the benefit of the doubt to the government and to rely on the record of the flawed Combat Status Review Tribunal. That, the Supreme Court said, is not an adequate substitute for a habeas corpus proceeding. It is an unconstitutional suspension of the writ and is invalid. In essence, the court said to the Bush administration, you can continue with these flawed proceedings at Gitmo, but when they're reviewed by the courts, the prisoners will have a full range of legal tools to challenge their detentions, and the burden of proof will be on the government. President Bush, in Rome, had this terse reaction to the decision.
We'll abide by the court's decision. That doesn't mean I have to agree with it.
Lawyers for prisoners at Guantanamo had the same take, but a different tone. Here, for example, is Georgetown law professor Neil Katyal.
I think that the decision today is the end of Guantanamo as we know it.
At the Justice Department, officials sought to put their spin on the decision, but were temporarily thwarted when reporters refused to agree to off-the-record ground rules. Bush allies in the legal community, however, saw unremitting defeat in today's ruling. Here, for example, is Andrew McBride, who filed a brief in the case on behalf of former GOP attorneys general.
Straight down the line, the Bush administration lost this case on every single one of the possible grounds that they could have won on.
And here's Harvard Law professor Jack Goldsmith, who served as assistant attorney general for the Office of Legal Counsel from 2003 to 2004.
I think the big message of the opinion is that the court has made clear yet again that it's going to have the final say over the scope of U.S. detention policies in the war on terrorism.
Today's decision applies only to Guantanamo, but most legal analysts agreed that the administration would run into trouble if it sought to transfer any of the detainees to U.S. bases elsewhere to avoid scrutiny. Vincent Warren is executive director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, which represents a number of detainees.
There's a warning in there, or an admonition at least, that the Bush administration should not try to get cute and try to send these men to different places along the globe.
Indeed, most observers, both pro- and anti-administration, seem to agree that today's decision not only threw a monkey wrench into the detainee system, it at the very minimum casts a cloud of doubt over the military war crimes trials that the administration has just now sought to begin against a very limited number of the detainees. Neil Katyal represents Salim Hamdan, a former driver for Osama bin Laden, who faces charges of providing material aid to terrorists.
I think today's decision is the death knell for the military trials at Guantanamo Bay. That system was set up under the fundamental assumption that the Constitution doesn't apply at all to Guantanamo, and all of the rules were written with that assumption in mind. Today's Supreme Court decision says that fundamental view is an error, and now all those rules will have to be rethought.
The tone of the Supreme Court's opinion was one of impatience. Repeatedly, the justices noted that many of the detainees have been imprisoned for more than 6 years, and the court short-circuited the legal process, ordering the lower courts to begin immediately processing challenges to the detentions. Within hours, Royce Lamberth, the chief judge of the Federal District Court in Washington, called an emergency meeting of all 16 district court judges to figure out how they're going to go about hearing and processing the pending writs of habeas corpus. Not all of the estimated 270 detainees at Gitmo may qualify yet for such hearings. The Supreme Court said today that detainees can be held for some unspecified period of time before they can seek court relief. Moreover, the lower courts will have to devise sensible rules that give the government time to comply with requirements in a responsible way that does not unduly undercut intelligence needs. George Terwilliger, who served as Deputy Attorney General in the first President Bush's administration, summarizes just a few of the remaining questions that will have to be resolved first by the lower courts and eventually, probably, by the Supreme Court.
What is the standard of proof? How much evidence is required? And what is the exact scope of the president's authority, the executive's authority, to hold an unlawful combatant, and under what circumstances, and for how long?
Some administration allies said this was not a job the courts can do. Again, Andrew McBride.
It's going to be a logistical nightmare.
Others disagreed, applauding the court's decision. Here, for example, is former Army Judge Advocate General Thomas Romig, now dean at Washburn University School of Law.
The court, in fact, says the political branches can't switch the Constitution on and off, and they cannot say what the law is. The law is the law.
Dissenting from today's ruling were Chief Justice John Roberts, joined by Justices Scalia, Thomas, and Alito. Said Roberts, today the court strikes down as inadequate the most generous set of procedural protections ever afforded aliens detained by this country as enemy combatants. Said Scalia, the nation will live to regret what the court has done today. While the court was sharply divided in the Guantanamo case, it was unified in a decision on the rights of American citizens detained in Iraq for alleged crimes committed there. Two U.S. citizens arrested and held by U.S. forces for alleged crimes claimed that they had the right to challenge their detentions in the U.S. courts before being turned over to the Iraqis for trial and punishment. But they wanted more than release. They sought injunctions to prevent being arrested by the Iraqis once released from U.S. custody for fear they would be tortured. The justices, however, ruled unanimously that courts are ill-suited to second-guess the U.S. government determination that Iraq's justice system meets international standards. Writing for the court, Chief Justice Roberts said, "When in Rome, you're subject to the laws of Rome." Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.